Okay. Did we miss anyone that may have joined?
No, I was just disconnected. It's David Jones from CDC of Tampa. Good afternoon.
Okay, CDC of Tampa. Okay. Good. Well, welcome everyone to this is the 24th cycle of these PLC calls. They're cycles of 10 calls, and we do them every 2 weeks, same time, same place. And if you should be getting notes that we send out on Friday. If you don't, we'll have you contact Heather, who will be on in just a second to talk about what's going on. The purpose of these calls are to just to get together and find out what's happening at EPA and what's happening for those who submitted grant applications a while ago. We're going to be tracking that for people who might be thinking of submitting a grant in the next round to get their program prepped, and for those who may be re-upping in the next round to talk about best practices, and people who have established programs and have been with us for a while, we really look forward to you helping us mentor new people and exchanging ideas, what some people are doing that others may not. This is a very diverse program, and sometimes there's often some tidbit in these calls that will be an idea that we could try that really is pretty neat, and it's just an exchange of open ideas. We tend to have topics, main topic every week. We try to go for about 30 minutes. Sometimes, unfortunately, it goes a little over. We start talking about it, but it's very informal. But we look at the topic at the moment, and we try to keep ourselves informed, and we try to exchange some ideas. So whenever you can make it, we really appreciate it. We also have notes that we do send out on Friday that talk about have the websites, URLs, and some of the things that you may not catch during the discussion. This week we're going to be, and this is the topic at hand, of course we're going to be talking about the progress of the evaluations for those who may have submitted. We're going to talk about COVID, which is a topic at the moment, and training and a scan that we sent out to try to get a feel for how everyone's doing and what they're doing. So we always start these off with news from Washington and news from HMTRI. So I'm going to turn it over with that to Heather. Do you want to give us the update on what's happening in Washington?
Yeah, absolutely. So on the HQ side of stuff, you know, this is that traditional bit in the RFA, which is the long wait. You know, this is the part where we're waiting to hear the next set of news. So things are really quiet on the HQ front. Really, there's no new news from HQ. The biggest thing just to keep everybody's mind that we always want to let you guys know is the National Brownfield Conference is set to happen in September. You know, just make sure that you keep that on your calendar, keep that in the back of your brain. You can always go to brownfields2021.org to learn more about the next National Brownfields Conference. So we do always try to remind everybody about that every time we have the PLC call, just to make sure everybody has that in their mind. From the HMTRI side of the world, I do try to let everybody know what's going on that one as well. Thank you to those who participated in the scan that we sent out, and I know that's going to be kind of the topic of choice that we have here, but my little bit of news that we're going to share with that is we have selected a date to hold the next virtual all-grantee meeting. We are going to hold that at a different time frame than what we typically hold the all-grantee meeting, and that's just because of the timing of the National Brownfields Conference. So we're going to hold the virtual all-grantee meeting for the May date that we offered, so May 4th through the 6th, and that'll be held from 12 to 3 Eastern virtual. So May 4th through 6th, 12 to 3 Eastern. You're hearing it here first live, so that's very exciting. You know, you guys get the cutting edge news always. We're very excited about that. So kind of throw that on your calendars. Keep that in mind. We'll get you guys in the loop and send more information out as we can, but we're very excited about that. And thank you to those who responded to the scan that we sent out. We do really appreciate that. But definitely get that on your calendar. Again, May 4th through the 6th, we're looking at that 12 to 3 Eastern time. And look forward to really having a great couple of days interacting with you guys and really discussing those topics that are exciting and relevant to the EWGAT community. Now, we did also want to share another opportunity with you all that came out. We have a series of some webinars that were shared with us from the NIEHS folks. So we do have some webinars, and I'm going to send that out to you all. We just got a request from Sharon Beard from NIEHS to pass that out to you guys. So I'm going to send that out to the listserv probably as soon as I get done talking here so you guys can see. But tomorrow there is going to be a webinar at 2 p.m. Eastern addressing the role of vaccine in workplace COVID-19 prevention, how to weed through misinformation, mistrust, and improve worker prevention. I'm just going to read you a real quick blurb on it. It's difficult to weed through all the noise online, in news, on social media, and in our communities about the impact of the vaccine, especially in the workplace. It is also intimidating to interpret data that is presented and available from federal, state, and local local organizations, including departments of health, academic institutions, and advocacy groups about what the vaccine will mean. This webinar will address why the vaccine will not be an immediate answer to preventing exposure to COVID-19 in the workplace and what that means for staying true to industrial hygiene hierarchy of controls. It will help attendees to sort through information, fears, and mistrust and use it to build safer environments for workers. English and Spanish interpretation will be available during this webinar. So this is a webinar that's available through the NIEHS folks. I will be sending that link out to the listserv here shortly if you guys are interested in learning more on that topic. And so just kind of keep an eye out on your email address or your email for that opportunity. If you don't receive my emails for anything, definitely send me an email to hkballou@eicc.edu. We can get you on any of our listservs. And Mike, I think at that point, I'm going to toss it back over to you.
In terms of the big picture, we have some people that may have not been on a PLC before. In terms of the big picture in environmental workforce development job training, of course, we've got the COVID issue that's going on as we speak. We've got applicants who have got grant applications in. We're waiting, as Heather said, for the big news. We have a difficult time always because they're not sure themselves how the evaluations are going and where they're at. Kind of the latest thinking is spring, whatever that means to you, maybe March or April. We thought might be in February. We tried to put on the notes a hypothetical schedule of how you're, and we could do that this week also. It's just conjecture of how things have flowed in the past. It might give you an idea of what may happen in environmental workforce throughout the year. If we talk about spring announcements, March or April, I don't think February, might be a little early. And then people will be negotiating their work plans and getting started. And of course, in the PLCs, we'll be talking about startups. And we will also be moving towards those who may not have, those of you who are new or may have be in your third year of your grant or looking to re-up. We're going to be anticipating that there are going to be another round, hopefully this summer. Again, there's nothing official on that, but if EPA holds true to the past, we can expect another request for announcements for another round that'll be coming up, and it'll be, if it's similar to the last round, it might be late summer. So we'll be gearing up towards applying for that new grant, and then of course working on our programs to deliver the best program we can despite COVID. And so that will give you an idea of what we're doing. We do this virtual meeting because we have to. We really prefer every August to do a in-person meeting where we can actually get together and sit down and hash out these ideas. We're going to try to do something like that if Brownfields goes ahead in the end of September. if they don't cancel it. We're assuming that it's going to go ahead, and I think everyone right now is planning on it going ahead. We would have a pre-conference face-to-face so we could get together and talk about all these things in person, but that's all conjecture and everyone's got their own opinions. But so that's why we're going to have definitely our virtual, where we'll be able to talk together on a Zoom, and then hopefully we'll be able to meet in person at the end of September, whether that gets delayed or not. So that kind of gives you a big picture. And then throughout the year, we'll be doing these 10-segment PLCs every other Wednesday, same time, same place. Well, one of the things we wanted to do is, where are we now? What's everybody else doing? And trying to share ideas. And it's obviously difficult, and EPA knows it's difficult. Everybody's in the same boat. People have all sorts of public health restrictions. We're shooting at a moving target. What wasn't allowed 6 months ago, people are now going back to classrooms in K-12. Sometimes they're not. Some people can do it in person. Some organizations are not allowing it. Some are masking up. So we've got this whole range across the schedule. And the Environment Workforce grants are no different. They're all over the grant spectrum. So what we tried to do in the scan was to get some ideas that we could discuss and what other people are doing, and maybe compare some notes. If nothing else, if we're not doing anything, we can realize we may be in good company. If we're doing some things, depending on our target group that we recruited, we're going to be doing other things. We may not have computers. We may not have internet. We may even have trouble with phones. So we want to talk about that and what might apply to one grantee who is very sophisticated and everyone has computers and they're rolling along. Another one's just trying to keep their program together, or they're in suspended animation so they can keep going. So keeping that in mind, we did this survey and tried to get a feel for the diversity of things that are going on. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Steve Fenton, and he's going to talk about some of the results we got from our scan in the last couple of weeks. Steve?
Okay. Thanks, Mike, and hello, everyone. Good to hear everyone's voice. Everybody made it through the new year. And as Heather and Mike both said, thanks for completing the scan. Those of you that are new, the term scan, that's the term we use. Some would use the term survey. So it's basically same thing. And we wanted to take this, as Mike said, it's kind of a snapshot in time, and it's evolving daily, but we wanted to find out where things were. We asked, if you completed the survey, there were 12 questions. The first one was, when did you want to hold us to hold the virtual conference? And as Heather mentioned, that's already been answered. The other questions relate to technical courses and non-technical courses, some of the challenges, how are you doing communication, and so forth. And what we thought we'd do today, it's going to be kind of difficult to hear this information without it in front of you to really let it absorb in, but we're going to put a kind of a condensed version, I think, in Mike's notes. So I'm going to do this like in three chunks. The first two things that I'm going to talk about are the responses to the survey for the technical courses and the non-technical courses. How are people, how are they going and teaching the classes? Are they in person? Are they online? Are they hybrid or some other configuration? So I'm going to cover that first, and then we're going to move it. The second kind of cluster here that I'm going to talk about are methods of class attendance that the students have. And then secondly, the what kind of communication are you using with your current students and potential students? Those responses are interesting. And then lastly, the last cluster that I'm going to talk about has to do with the challenges, what you've identified as challenges to providing training during the pandemic in these trying times. Those are fascinating responses. And then lastly, what are some best practices that you've been finding successful? And there are a few of those that we'd like to share with you as well. So after each of these clusters, I'll stop and ask if you would like to, make any comments, or if you have questions or so forth. We'll entertain that after each of these clusters. So with the first one, the technical classes, that we listed 24 typical courses that our grantees have offered, the ones that we're most familiar with. And so those were the ones we listed, and then folks could also write in others. You know, there was an other category. So the first group of those included HAZWOPER, which had 13 responses. First aid and CPR had 11, and OSHA and construction safety had 11. And so with HAZWOPER, with those 13 responses, four were offering courses in person, two online, five hybrid, and two in another configuration. For first aid, they're offering 11 responses there, four in person, three online, two hybrid, and two other. And for OSHA construction safety, 11 responses, six in person, and two online, one hybrid, and two other. And then for the next group, asbestos and lead, they're usually kind of similar. We had seven responses to asbestos. Four of those are being offered in person, one online, one hybrid, one other. And then for lead, there were six responses, three in person, one online, one hybrid, and one other. And then lastly, the last group, forklift, there were eight responses, three in person, one online, two hybrid, and two other. And then bloodborne pathogens, eight responses, four are being offered in person and three online and one other. So that's kind of the highlights of those offering technical courses, the ones with the most responses. And as you could kind of tell, it's kind of a mixed bag between in-person and hybrid and some online. Now, for the non-technical courses, there were a total of nine that we listed there, the ones that we thought were the most typical, chemical dependency, conflict resolution, effective communication, employment readiness, problem solving, team building / anger management, time management, toxic relationships, and transition assistance. And of those, the ones that received the most responses, well, the first one was employment readiness, which would include things like interviewing, dress and work expectations and resume writing, et cetera. 10 people responded that they're offering that currently, three in person, one online, five hybrid, and one other. Eight folks said they're offering team building / anger management. Four are doing it in person, one online, two hybrid, and one other. And then lastly, problem solving had the third most responses. That was seven, and three are offering it in person, one online, two hybrid, and one other. So that's just kind of a summary of those technical and non-technical courses that are being offered. And again, the responses are, you know, limited, but it does kind of show that all three, you know, methods, both in-person, online, and hybrid, are generally the most, the ones with the highest participation rate. So does anybody have any comments about the technical or non-technical classes that are being offered or that you're offering? Okay.
I think this is Buddy in New Bedford. We're at that at the stage where we're trying to select how we're going to do what we're going to do. So it's very helpful to hear what I just heard because, you know, we had to do an RFP to get the trainers on board. That's the stage that we're at. And, of course, the what are they presenting to us, and do we go with this, do we go with that? And I think what you're saying is that, for what I'm hearing from the survey, is that there's a multifaceted approach to this that we must take due to the circumstances of COVID.
Mm-hmm.
And we're here in our area, we're very concerned about what things are going to be like next week and the next 6 to 8, 10 weeks because of what's happening with COVID. So this is helpful information. Thank you.
Exactly. You bet.
The elephant in the room here, of course, is 1910-120 has Whopper, the face-to-face courses. And that is being handled a lot of different ways. If you were to go online and look for trainers that could do Has Whopper online, they'll tell you they can do it. They're the same with OSHA 10 and OSHA 30. They say they can do it. Often, though, it's the fine print because, of course, with Has Whopper, you've got to have on-site training, and you almost have to have some sort of in-person. So you have to be a little careful, and I think, as Buddy said, it depends on your trainer whether they think they can do it. And Has Whopper, again, is the elephant in the room because that's really the only course that's required in these grants. Now, having said that, it may have influence on your recruitment because if you have to do online or if you have to do a hybrid, then as you recruit and screen, you have to ask yourself the question, are we going to use that as a screening method? Are we only going to take people who are computer literate? Are we going to restrict this to people who can't do online training? That has severe implications.
Or even having access to a computer.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Because I had this discussion just the other day. So we're looking in that regard. I'm glad you said that. In that regard, so we're looking at possibility of having some satellite spots where individuals can go and use computers at certain agencies during a certain period of time. You know, something like that. That's all up in the air.
Right.
I'm not saying that's what we're doing because I don't know yet.
and you haven't recruited yet, have you? I mean, you haven't.
All this is unfolding. And, of course, we're putting the word out there to the residents in the community. So, in a sense, we're doing some outreach that we constantly do anyhow. But in doing that outreach, in that conversation is that, do you have a computer? Can you do it here? Can you do it there? That kind of stuff. And so those are options.
Right. Now, it's interesting, too, on a lot of these, which are hybrid courses, you might ask the difference, what's between doing a hybrid and just K-12 and going back to school. So, you know, the question is if your health department is saying, well, we're opening K-12, there's a good possibility you can do some face-to-face in-person training in a classroom setting. But now when we get to that's classroom with masks on, now when we start talking about donning and doffing suits, where we're getting into close contact, what can you really do? And if you can, how do you do it? And I think everyone's grappling it with in a different way. I think Ken, who's on the line, they're able to manage this face-to-face. Others just aren't able to. I'm thinking someone just put us on hold.
Time's up.
Well, we can do a couple of different things.
Oh, there you go.
Don't put us on hold, please. Oh, there we go. Okay. It won't be the first and probably the last that we get to listen to some music, so keep us off hold if you can.
Okay, sorry about that.
That's okay. We don't use a real sophisticated meeting thing because I like to keep it informal, and that's happened before, and it'll happen again, so
yeah,
that's fine.
About
so some, as we were saying, some people are able to handle this and some aren't, but the implication is that it may have implications in your target and your recruitment. If you're going to be going online, and it's going to have also implications in your RFP to your trainer. A lot of you are training in-house, but a lot of you are also farming out your training to contractors, and you're going to have to look at those contractors and make sure that they don't have fine print you don't know about. In other words, can they really do Has Whopper? You know, that's the question.
All right. Should I go to the next group?
We could go on. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So the next cluster was method of class attendance, how are your students attending classes? And that was, you know, we basically asked you what was the primary method of class attendance that your students have. In fact, you could check all that apply. And so we had 11 responses to in-person, 7 responses to online using their phone. There were 8 responses to online using a computer or tablet. 2 said they were unable to hold training at this time due to state/local restrictions. And then there was 1 that said other. So 15 using online, some kind of version, either their phone or computer or tablet, and 11 in person. And then we the second question in this cluster was, what resources have you been using for communication with students and potential students? Select all that apply. A lot of methods of communication here. Email, 14 people selected that. 12 selected phone. 10 selected Zoom. 7 selected Facebook. 6 selected other. And the 6 other examples were Google Meet, radio and traditional media, text, something called Connect Team. And behind that in parentheses, they said this is a fantastic app. I'd actually never heard of it. So Connect Team. And then door knockers. They're actually having people go out and knock on doors. I'm not sure exactly how that's working. And then there were 5 that said in-person meetings, 5 mail, 2 Microsoft Teams, and 1 GoToMeeting. So as you can see, there's a variety of communication methods that folks are using to contact their students. So that's the kind of the second cluster, both the method of class attendance for students and the communication that you're having with students. So I don't know. Does anyone have any comments they want to make?
I want to make one quick comment on that. We're an old-fashioned organizing organization, so we do mm-hmm. door knocking, and we do put out distribution of flyers, and that's something that we're also working on right now because we know the neighborhoods and all that and the demographics, so we're able to use right. The flyers as a methodology. So it's not a bad thing.
Okay. No, good. Any other feedback or comments about that? Well, if not, I'll move on to the challenges and the kind of innovative approaches. These are very interesting. The question was, what do you find to be your biggest challenge in providing training during a pandemic? First response said, in descending order, 1, lowered interest in trainings and employment, 2, not being able to offer full in-person trainings, and 3, increased child care / elder care responsibilities. That was the first response. The second was recruitment. The third was our target audience has very little access to the internet or tablet/ computers to do online work. Kind of what Buddy was alluding to. And then next one was keeping everyone's attention. The 40-hour HasWhopper has been the worst. The modules are too long and people lose interest. The next one was certification requires in-person sessions. Pandemic restrictions prohibited in-person sessions for several months. Capacity restrictions slow the rate of attendance and completion. Internet is unreliable. Participants lack devices for remote training. So that was one response right there, a very thorough one. The next one was our curriculum works only as in-person, especially with technology limitations for our participants. This, however, places limitations on class size. The next one was maintaining a safe environment, screening, and ensuring everyone wears a mask, uses hand sanitizer, and follows all protocols. The issue is people will still engage in risky activities outside of class, potentially putting other students and staff at risk. Constant reminders are needed. The next one was methods changing before we even got the program started. And that's something I think everybody's kind of grappling with. It's kind of a moving target with some of the restrictions and things that they're referring to here. The next one was being able to transport the students to the interviews is a challenge. The next one was finding individuals who want and are willing to take a job that requires them to report in person. Finding a way to structure the size of our cohort due to gathering size limitations in Pennsylvania. We have had to run a cohort no larger than 10 participants due to Pennsylvania restrictions. This will result in us running an extra cohort if restrictions are not lifted by 2021. And then finally, the last comment there under challenges was hands-on with social distancing CDC requirements is a challenge. So those, there were like 13 comments there talking about the individual challenges. Now, as far as best practices, there's three here that we want to mention. One person responded that they're focusing more on personal needs and or getting employment even outside the field so they can maintain some stability for future progress and training down the road. And the second one was classroom with 6 to 8 feet social distancing with exhaust fans through HEPA filters. You know, that's kind of a best practice or kind of an innovation. And then the third one was for required hands-on activities, students are wearing respirators instead of cloth face coverings. Otherwise, cloth face coverings are used in the classroom activities. So apparently they're using respirators, and they didn't specify whether it's, what kind of respirator, but they're using respirators rather than a cloth mask for their hands-on activities, and then cloth face coverings for their indoor or classroom activities. So those are some of the challenges and best practices actually that kind of surfaced as a result of this scan. So would anybody like to kind of comment on those or have anything else to add?
I just want to say thank you for this, because here in Kansas we're running into the same kind of situations on capacity levels. We can't have more than 10 people in a room, and obviously one of those people is the trainer, so having to reevaluate what it's going to look like if this doesn't change, how many more cohorts do we have to come through. So just thank you for the individuals that did complete this. I did not, so my apologies.
Well, we found this
it
to
is
be very useful. Go ahead, Mike.
It is a challenge, and we are, I like to think, we're coming out of the worst part of it, and as the vaccines kick in and maybe as restrictions, hopefully, I don't think public health people want to go backwards, there tend to be a tendency to start to open up the lower grades of the schools, some of the high schools, so perhaps we could start meeting. Although it seems like if we're meeting, it has to be 10 or less, and distance learning, and a distance separating people and wearing masks, there's some semblance of being able to get some training going. Probably the people that are the most difficult that have courses already in session or their cohort was interrupted last spring, that's a difficult time for them.
Well, I would like to emphasize that, you know, that we need to get as many individuals around the country in the work pipelines. And in order to do that, many of them have to have this training. So we need to be as creative as possible, whether it's hybrid, the computer, on street corners, whatever it is, to get folk educated, certified, so they can compete for these jobs that will be coming. With the new administration coming in, it's not crazy to say 3 to 4 months from now the job market's going to go crazy. It's not crazy to think of what's going to happen 8 months from now or even 18 months from now with the infrastructure stuff and the harbor developments. And we have a lot of stuff going on here with deletting and things. I'm just talking about for my region. But we need to be able to pump out qualified individuals out of these neighborhoods, or we're going to lose opportunities all over again.
I was going to say, this is Brenda Gaynor from Oregon Tradeswomen. So we did have to get really creative, and we did implement, we're still holding our hands-on training. However, we had to truly utilize the space that we have. So we actually gave each student 64 square feet. Now the minimum is 36 square feet per person within a given space. And so so we were able to maximize that and then and had each student work in their own space. And then we implemented an online training via Shobi and Zoom. And so we were able to just transfer our...
We just picked it up.
But I was going to say that you know it's been a rough road trying to figure this stuff out. But but we've had great support from partners who have helped us out because we've tried to see what they do as far as you know how they implement their hands-on training and online. So it's worked out for us. However, we've had to create a contingency plan in case we had to shut down completely, which means that we would have had to transfer everything over to online. And then we would have had to figure out what hands-on is going to be, you know, from there. So it's been a bit tricky, but
yep.
Thankfully, knock on wood, nobody's gotten sick. But we're very strict about, if people go out and party, that you know they have to let us know. But we also let them know you're not going to graduate with a certificate and get a job if you don't practice well-being at home and then come to class. So
right.
So we're pretty strict with our wording as well as our policies.
We're doing this is TAM ECA in Philadelphia. First we did small class size, and we have a very large space, like 28,000 square feet, so that was okay. Then we went, when it spiked in our area really badly, we went to a combination virtual and in-person. Then a couple of times we've had to, as my friend earlier said, we did have to shut down completely because one of us tested positive or temperature was off or, no, actually, it was the times we shut down completely was when somebody did test positive. So we had to shut operations. So then the instructors went completely virtual, but what they did, which I'm so respectful, they figured out, they set up in their own homes, these guys, ways to demonstrate the techniques so that they could show the students, at least the students would normally be doing hands-on, but at least they could see what the instructor was doing. And then as soon as possible, when we were cleared, we went back to the blend of the virtual and the in-person. The other thing we did when we had to shut down was the three instructors, they figured out a way to do the testing with the students staying at home. They literally were between the student and the instructor and the certifying body, they had a loop of the test and the scoring that was secure. So they actually kept the students on track. The only time they let students come in when we were shut down was if somebody was really struggling and just said, I can't, I don't get it. Then on a one-on-one basis, they would go in. So it's been a bumpy road, but I such respect for these three men because they're figuring out ways to keep it going, to keep the students going.
You've got some great instructors, and this brings up a point. Yeah. We had a question this week of people looking for curriculum or trainers or that type of thing. This program is so individualistic, depending on the town you live in, the resources you have, whether you have consultants or people are consultants to do this as a part-time or full-time job. It is so dependent that it's almost like everyone's got their own situation. You might have expertise in-house, and you could teach a lot of the courses in-house. You may have to farm out one or two. Or you may find instructors like you have that are just, they've got close connection to local OSHA and they were able to do things that nobody else could do. So congratulations. You know, it's, and it would be nice if we could give everyone a one size fits all, but it isn't. It's everyone is going to have to, and as his buddy said, that RFP, if you go out in your search for instructors, is maybe one of the most critical things in your program, next to recruiting your students. But it's going to be really important to see what they've done and what they can do in your particular situation.
Mike, our instructors actually came through the training center itself. So that's one of their many strengths, but that's one of their big ones because they get it and they know how to make it work. So really,
are they independents, or did they join a consulting firm?
They're staffed.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Hmm. Yeah.
They started out as contractors, but the two guys who are the tech guys, they came up through the training center. There's a third man, Ugo Prieto, who does our literacy numeracy. He came to us as a contractor, but now they're all three staff positions.
Excellent. Okay. Excellent. And, you know, you hate to say everybody's on their own, but in a sense, you kind of are. There aren't canned programs. Now, there are programs out there. And you can go to the clearinghouse and bits and pieces of different courses. Now, when you go to the non-tech courses, you might have an easier time finding canned online courses. Of course, if you know, resume development and employment preparedness, you still have to work with them on interviewing and interviewing technique, which would be face-to-face. But a lot of that, financial literacy, can be done completely online. The Federal Reserve has an excellent set of courses. So there it's a question of there are programs. You just need still instructors that could apply those programs and students who could use them, you know, and keep their interest. But it's the tech courses that are the tough ones.
Mike, before I forget, I wanted to just mention also that we're working on a webinar that's going to be forthcoming in lieu of a PLC in late February or March. We're not sure the exact date yet, but it's going to be kind of a one-time Zoom meeting where we're going to be going over innovative approaches that some of the folks are using out there to share with others. So just wanted to mention that that's forthcoming also.
Have any of you had interaction with your regional coordinators, or are they just lying low right now? Inquiries or recommendations, anything like that?
Well, we have been talking back and forth.
Mm-hmm. I think they may be more lost than you are in terms of how to deal with this and maybe looking to our grantees to see how they're handling it because, you know, they're somewhat in a disarray, and you all are the boots on the ground. So I think in many ways they're looking to the grantees to see how they're going to work this through.
Well, just to go a little step further, if people would just do the right thing by wearing a mask and social distance and staying home and trying to stay healthy and their family and friends stay healthy, that's what we got to do so we can get back to the normal stuff that we would like to be doing with training and all that kind of stuff and getting people back to work. So
that's right. Good point. Well, this discussion won't go away, and we'll be talking on it. And if you are doing great, congratulations. That's fantastic. If you're not doing anything or you're between cohorts, that's okay too. If you're kind of caught in the middle, you know, it's this struggle. Do you schedule your easy courses, your non-technical courses first and try to buy some time till perhaps you could get your people together? It seems like as months go by, this thing is going to look a little better each time. So we're with you. I think we're I don't think anyone has the answers right now except you all in terms of how you're working through this. I think that EPA is very understanding of the situation. So hopefully they'll be, you know, working with us, and we'll see where that takes us. Well, any other questions or comments that anyone would like to make?
No, thank you. Very healthy, very welcoming our first meeting. Thank you very much.
We'll be talking about this in future meetings, and hopefully we'll see y'all or hear from you in 2 weeks, and stay healthy.
Take care, everybody.
Well, take care.